This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 7 and 8, The Slug Club and Snape Victorious. In these chapters, we get a good dose of elitism from Horace Slughorn.
Yes, we do. That's very funny. Yes.
Yes. And Snape gets his ultimate wish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to say good for that guy, but I don't feel that way.
Yeah. So, again, what were preliminary impressions and thoughts?
Slughorn, you know, kind of like proved to be the person that we knew he was. Just even, it just to me feels a little funny when you're going to the teenagers. Like, that's how kind of desperate you are for that kind of connection. So that was funny. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Malfoy of it all. And then I don't know why Snape is teaching the dark arts, but...
Yeah. How did you feel about that little plot twist?
You know, I read this probably about like I got off work and I was like, I need to finish my reading. I'm so confused. Okay. I'm so confused because we know Dumbledore, you know, he trusts Snape, and then we have this other guy. So basically it was a very deliberate decision on Dumbledore's part, as far as I understand, to replace one guy to do potions and then be like, hey, Snape, you're doing the thing you've always wanted to do. And then we know that other backstory about Snape. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's very sneaky of Harry the writer to write it in such a way that we just presume that it's a defensive against the dark arts, you know, when all the little escapade at Slughorn's house. But Dumbledore never, ever said it was for the defense against the dark arts.
My least favorite thing that people do. But yes, I mean, as I read that, I thought, well, they never said. So,
yes.
Do you think Harry would have changed his mind? Probably. He would have been a little, if he knew that was going to be the sequence of events.
Yeah, because, because it's never, you know, we're told that that was Professor Slughorn's, like, old position, like, before he retired. But we don't know, like, what he, like, professionally, what he's capable. Is he capable of teaching defense against dark arts? Like, we don't know.
We don't know. Yeah. Maybe we'll find out.
Ooh. So, yes. But first, we begin with Chapter 7, The Slug Club. And so, Harry is substantially more invested and interested in the mystery surrounding Malfoy than Ron and Hermione. And so, how do you feel about this dynamic of, especially in the context of the sort of prologue chapters before Harry's point of view, that we get all this stuff with Narcissa, Bellatrix, and Snape, that something is up in regards to Draco. So how does it feel in terms of, again, this dynamic with Harry insisting like something's like really wrong and Ron and Hermione kind of blowing him off, really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little confused by that, to be quite honest, because it does, I mean, Harry's right, and Ron and Hermione, it's like almost like they don't want to be bothered. They're like with it. They're not, they're like, yeah, sure. It doesn't make sense, but you know, like okay, yeah, sure, he's in a Death Eater. Like, he's 16. Like, that kind of kept being the repeated phrase. People were like, oh, he's 16. But as far as the interest in Malfoy's, like, shenanigans, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Harry and Voldy are more connected than we thought. I don't know.
Yeah. It was just interesting because it's one thing when you don't have, again, the added context of, again, the first chapter, you know.
Right.
So maybe if Harry had chosen to write the book in a way where he didn't show that interaction with Snape and Narcissa, or at least not yet, you know, maybe people could see it more balanced. I'm just kind of surprised. I think it's in the way I feel Ron and Hermione are, like, part of their disbelief comes from literally just a lack of confidence and, you know, in Draco himself and, you know, his ineptitude and thinking, like, he's not competent enough for Voldemort to, like, want him as a Death Eater, like, in this way or, you know, whatever. So part of it's just, you know, underestimating Malfoy. But I feel like a part of it is, and even we get this with Arthur when Harry tries to confide and, you know, to see if Arthur can do anything about it. It's very much they're acting as if, you know, again, Harry is just inflating his personal dislike of Draco into something more. And they did the same thing with him with Snape and Occlumency, or at least Hermione I feel like some people, and in this case, Ron and Hermione, and, you know, several other people in the series, when it comes to Harry and his relationships with Draco and Malfoy and Snape, like, people are assuming that Harry's being just as, like bullheaded and stubborn and petty as Draco and Snape are in the relationship, but Harry isn't, and I never felt that Harry was. You know, I've always felt Harry's been more on the defensive, and so it just makes me sad that so many characters, that just because Draco and Snape act in certain ways towards, you know, Harry, that doesn't mean that Harry is, you know, being driven by that sort of pettiness as well. That it's like, no, it's like something for real, man.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like also, like, Harry seems to have a better read of things going on than most. So they just really quickly dismiss him when he says he's a Death Eater. They're like, no, like, you're being dramatic, kind of. I mean, they don't say that, but it's kind of the vibe. They're like, eh. So then he confides in Mrs. Weasley
or Mr. Weasley.
Okay, Mr. Weasley. Sorry.
Yeah, later on at the train station.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I guess I could sort of understand Ron and Hermione's position, like, maybe beforehand with Draco. But I think, you know, Ron and Hermione, again, even without knowing, you know, all the stuff that we get in the prequels as the reader, or not prequels, the, like, prologue chapters, shall we say, Lucius Malfoy is now in jail. Like, the Malfoy name is now in disgrace. And so, like, and Harry points this out. Malfoy's father is in Azkaban. Don't you think Malfoy, like, revenge? And so, I guess, you know, Harry is being more astute in considering probably the sort of desperation and raw emotion that Malfoy probably has right now and how that can be weaponized.
Yeah. I don't know.
Sniffles, allergies.
Yeah, I do. Since I was outside last night, it's going to be bad. So it's just hitting me right now. For the listeners, I put myself off camera and muted myself because I did not want Amy to watch me spray my medicine up my nose. So
yeah, doing coke.
Yeah, that's when I start talking real fast the rest of the show.
So they have their whole conversation about Malfoy. Really hits it. They hit an impasse. They agree to disagree, I suppose. And then Harry's gonna go downstairs, and Ginny comes up and is like, you know, I wouldn't go in the kitchen just now. She warned him there's a lot of phlegm around. I'll be careful not to slip in it.
How cute, Harry. I thought that was very cute and gross at the same time, but I also, the hate, we talked about this a little last time, like kind of the dislike of the kind of hating on Flora is a little annoying.
You know, and it's sad that Ginny is being so shitty to Flora, but Flora is making her a bridesmaid.
Yeah, she's trying. She's doing what she knows. Like, I think that's the hardest part of melding families sometimes. It's like, this is, especially sisters-in-law, I guess. It's, you're doing what you know, and you're trying to show people something like appreciation in the way you know how, but obviously Jenny is not receiving that. Not that I've ever been a Jenny, but I have, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah. And, you know, Fleur's just, like, I don't, being portrayed as she's being so annoying. And it's like, you know, all Fleur is saying is, like, Ginny and Gabrielle will look so cute together. Ginny and Gabrielle will look very sweet together. I am thinking of dressing them in pale gold. Pink would, of course, be horrible with Ginny's hair. So, like, I don't know. I feel like Fleur is the type of woman who, again, I don't think she's being mean or throwing shade at Ginny because she can't do pink. She's just trying to be considerate of, you know, I don't want Ginny to look bad. I want her to look good.
Yeah. And I think I wonder if there's like a level of practicality that the Weasleys are used to that Fleur is just kind of like
comes off as over the top.
Well, and kind of, you know, is totally opposite. Like, she's taking into consideration things like that, where the Weasleys at one point would be like, oh, you have a new dress, great, like, I don't care if it's pink and it doesn't go with your hair, you know. So I kind of wonder, because Mrs. Weasley is irritated with her too, if there's just like, the Weasleys are so used to living in like practicality, and then Fleur kind of flies in the face of that, and she's kind of a little bit more, like, cares a little bit more about things like that, that they don't kind of know how to, it doesn't compute right
yet. Yeah, and I can relate to Fleur in the sense of, you know, people seeing, I'm someone who views fashion as, like, art, like it's a means of self-expression and creativity rather than materialism or elitism, and I see it that way because I thrift so much.
Yeah.
And so when people compliment me at work about how well, you know, I dress, and, you know, saying, oh, we look like a bunch of, like, you know, bridge or cave trolls compared to you. And it's like, all of my stuff is from Goodwill.
I mean, go ahead. Sorry, finish.
No, go on.
I mean, you're not like, yeah, you do look like a bunch of cave trolls, get out of here, you know, and she's not doing that too. Well, she does make a little bit of a remark about Tonks that it's kind of like, so I don't know. She's the puzzle right now.
Yeah. And I wonder how much, you know, how much of this, again, is Harry's point of view coming off. And also, and it made me realize just the, you know, when you read a book, like, just purely the text and your own imagination, like, you know, you could take a variety of spins. When you listen on an audiobook, definitely the narrator is already choosing decisions and is already choosing certain interpretations.
Right.
And so definitely I felt, again, love Jim Dale as a narrator, but definitely Jim Dale plays into the, like, sort of vain, what's perceived as the vain aspect of Fleur, whereas, again, in the possible jab at Tonks, you know, she says she has let herself go that Tonks, and she's like, a big mistake, you know. And we don't know if she said this, like, we don't know if maybe Fleur was coming from the position of, oh, that's such a shame, you know, she's so nice, right, and, like, so, you know, go lucky, and, you know, all, like, she could have been on the right, about to, like, list some, like, admirable qualities, both physical and personality, but she is not given the opportunity to do so.
Right. Yeah, she gets cut off pretty quick, so.
Yeah. So, anyway, so Mrs. Weasley, again, not pleased, because, again, she just does not want this wedding to take place and hates hearing about it. And then we move very quickly to the next morning about, you know, gathering, going into the ministry cars and going to the train station, and Fleur is like, au revoir, Harry, said Fleur, kissing him goodbye. Ron hurried forward, looking hopeful, but Ginny stuck out her foot and Ron fell sprawling in the dust at Fleur's feet.
Dang, sisters.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so no cheerful Hagrid as security, just a bunch of grumpy ministry workers. Boo.
Dang, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so they get on platform 9 3/4. and, you know, start organizing themselves. And then this is where Harry finally decides, right before they leave, is like, Mr. Weasley, can I talk to you?
Which is quite different than he has done in previous books.
Yeah, like the conversation, the closest conversation that comes to this with Mr. Weasley is the one in Prisoner of Azkaban, but that's the one that Mr. Weasley initiated to, like, supposedly warn, you know, Harry about Sirius Black, but Harry, like, already overheard them the night before.
Right, right.
Yeah, so, you know, so this is Harry. And again, Mr. Weasley is also very, again, dismissive of Harry's thoughts, but... You know, even if, again, it comes off as, you know, again, inflating, like, just because Draco is petty and shitty, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, Harry, you know, is the same in the same way. Like, usually he tries to, like, avoid things. But, you know, but Mr. Weasley does make the valid point that we did a thorough search of Malfoy Manor and we took away everything.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so this made me think of and I'm going to give a spoiler alert for 2 seconds here about a movie that's in a book that's out. So spoiler alert, Where the Crawdads Sing. If you don't want it spoiled, then skip ahead.
She wants, seconds. That author is wanted for questioning for a murder. And I'm like, of course.
I know. It's a wild situation. But there's a part of the story where she hides something in a book. So I was thinking, like, humans miss things. So who knows?
Yeah, because, and even Harry suggests that, and
spoiler over.
Author's just like, and it's also very interesting because Arthur actually has a personal grudge against, you know, the Malfoys and just everything they stand for. And Arthur also, it's not an age thing because Ron and Hermione are making the same mistake, but it's not thinking that, Draco is desperate and angry right now with the situation with his dad in prison. That's something we should probably keep an eye on. But he's just like, meh.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Well, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it does and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know. So, yeah. I'm just very disappointed that everyone, and if I were in Harry's shoes, I would be especially frustrated because, again, he just spent the whole last book, you know, being the victim of a smear campaign and people not believing him or taking him seriously. Right. And the fact that the people closest to him are like, hey, I'm kind of worried about this. And they're just like, meh.
They're like, it's probably fine. It's like, yeah. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and so they finally, you know, he finally gets on the train and waves goodbye, and it's all hunky-dory.
Yeah, everything's wonderful.
Yeah, Harry cannot sit with Ron and Hermione because they're still prefects and they gotta patrol the corridors and whatever. And Harry, is like, you know, goes to Ginny, is like, fancy trying to find an apartment? I can't, Harry. I'd said I'd meet Dean, said Ginny brightly. See you later. Right, said Harry. He felt a strange twinge of annoyance as she walked away, her long red hair dancing behind her. He had become so used to her presence over the summer that he almost forgotten that Ginny did not hang out around with him, Ron, and Hermione while at school.
Yeah, I don't know. Harry, I know what road we're about to take, and I don't think that's mild annoyance. I think you're seeing Jenny in a different light, which apparently many other young men at Hogwarts have seen, are very fond of Jenny. We'll get to that.
Yeah. And we are met with Neville and Luna, which, you know, Harry, a year ago on the Hogwarts Express, being with Neville and Luna, you know, basically thought they were so uncool, was so embarrassed by them in front of Cho. And now he's just like, hey, it's my homies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they've seen some stuff together. So interesting.
Mm-hmm. And Harry's like, Quibbler's still going strong then. Asked Harry, who felt a certain fondness for the magazine, having given it an exclusive interview the previous year? Oh, yes. Circulation's well off. And so they all go sit together, and Neville's like, they're even staring at us because we're with you. They're staring at you because you were at the ministry too.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. Getting some celebrity. And this is so sad with Neville. He's like, yeah, I thought Gran would be angry about all the publicity, but she was really pleased. Says I'm starting to live up to my dad at long last.
this vulture hat wearing lady needs to calm down. Like, that's not very nice.
Yeah, but Neville has got a new wand because his wand broke in the ministry.
And at a funny time, because we know Ollivander is, like, peaced out. We don't know where, why, or what.
Yeah, he got his wand the day before Ollivander disappeared.
Yeah.
And so his wand is unicorn hair and cherry wood. And my headcanon tends to dictate, you know, as Neville says in the ministry, you know, my grand's going to kill me. You know, that was my dad's wand, you know, the one he was using. So even though, you know, again, having your, you know, not dead, but, you know, absent parents wand, that might be a nice sentimental thing, but so much emphasis is on the wand chooses the wizard. So a part of me thinks that part of why Neville was, you know, not very good in school and couldn't reach his full potential is because he didn't have his own wand. Like, his grandmother probably forced his father's wand on him, trying to use it, not working, and probably now that he has his own wand, will do a hell of a lot better.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's you know, finding the right tool for the job is a lot of the issue oftentimes.
Mm-hmm. And so then they are interrupted by a group of fourth year girls, and one particularly precocious one named Romilda Vane is like, "Hey, you want to come sit with us? You don't have to sit with them."
Rude. What a little bee.
Yeah. And Harry says coldly, "They're friends of mine." "Oh," said the girl, looking very surprised. "Oh, okay."
There's a lot of love for Harry right now. I mean, there's always been love for Harry, but there's a lot of female attention that he seems to be getting right now.
Yeah. And Luna states the obvious of, "People expect you to have cooler friends than us." "You are cool," said Harry shortly. "None of them were at the ministry. They didn't fight with me." "That's a very nice thing to say," beamed Luna. Again, Harry Luna is my favorite non-canon ship.
Yeah, I feel like she keeps him a little grounded. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Even though she's not grounded at all. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't make sense, but
it makes perfect sense. Yep. And again, another thing with that vulture hat wearing grandma. You should hear my grand talk about you. That Harry Potter's got more backbone than the whole Ministry of Magic put together. She'd get anything to have you as a grandson.
And then Harry has the very kind of astute little
monologue. You know, thinking about how, again, Neville could have been the child that Voldemort chose to go after. And what would that have looked like?
Right.
You know, the road of what if. I'm sure someone's written that fan fiction.
I'm sure they have.
Somewhere in the 800,000 fanfics of Harry Potter on the internet.
I didn't realize how many, like, they're popular, like, non-fanfiction, like, books that come out that are started as a Harry Potter. I can't think of the name of one, but there was one that was very
popular. Atlas Six.
Yes. Okay.
It's a very prominent staple in, like, the dark academia subgroup of gothic stuff, and it started out as a Draco Hermione fanfiction.
I didn't know that. Okay. Good to know. Yeah. Good to know.
Yep. So, anyway, so we get, let's see. Oh, Ron and Hermione finally join. And then it's not too long where Harry and Neville receive invitations from Professor H.E.F. Slughorn.
Mr. Bougie himself with his little scrolls. I love it. As much as he's kind of pretentious and annoying, I do love a little bit of drama. So.
Yeah. "Harry, I would be delighted if you would join me for a bit of lunch in compartment C."
How lovely.
Yep. And so he goes there, originally wants to spy on Draco, can't because it's too crowded and he can't get around with the invisibility cloak. And so he starts noticing that everyone is like peering over, trying to get a look at him. Everyone except Cho Chang.
Here we go, just destroying poor Cho. I mean, like, I can't blame her. I'd do the same thing.
The exception was Cho Chang, who darted into her compartment when she saw Harry coming. As Harry passed the window, he saw her deep in determined conversation with her friend Marietta, who was wearing a very thick layer of makeup that did not entirely obscure the odd formation of pimples still etched across her face. Smirking slightly, Harry pushed on. Which, again, this is a contentious point in the fandom of the ethics of Hermione leaving the curse on Marietta.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was like, why did we point this out? Now I remember. Okay. I just feel bad for her because I know that struggle. So
yeah, again, that's a you know, that's a different like ethical issue. In terms of Cho Chang, like even with the curse, I don't fully endorse or approve Cho Chang's defense of Marietta.
Yeah.
Because again, like, you know, some people, to me, I think, you know, some people trivialize Marietta as like, she's just a minor who snitched. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. But it's like, and then it's the hard thing because, you know, like you have to treat everyone, quote unquote, you know, equally in terms of being a minor, being treated as adult. But unfortunately, in real life, some people are more mature than others. And that's why there are, you know, discretion is made on whether to try someone as a minor or an adult, of whether they have the maturity to be held accountable. And I'm just at a point where Marietta, like, she wasn't in any danger. Like, no one was threatening her. No one was doing anything to her. She didn't need to, like, blab. She could have just quit going if she really didn't want to do it anymore.
Right.
She didn't have to ruin it for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't agree with Cho in, you know, sticking with Marietta. Like, at this point, you can still be upset with her or whatever, but I wouldn't be Marietta's friend anymore.
Yeah. 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 I wonder what her deal is. It's interesting. Yeah.
So anyway, so then we get to Slughorn's compartment, and basically it's this bougie lunch of Slughorn trying to make connections with the students who have prominent figures, family members, or, you know, Harry notices that, you know, apart, and everyone has a sort of connection except Ginny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's, as I said we went into chapter 4 when we first met Horse Slughorn, you know, you can interpret Slughorn's favoritism like in a benevolent way or a more like elitist way, you know, and classist way. And this is this whole interaction at the lunch is definitely one that's more one point for the team of, you know, viewing it as elitism in a negative light, because it's the minute one of the kids, Belby, I think, you know, mm-hmm. says that, oh, I'm not really that close with my super famous uncle, like my father and I don't get along, you know, immediately when that happens, Slughorn like ignores him and doesn't, you know, disregards him, which is totally goes against, you know, again, Ginny has no connections, but clearly, as we find out later, she was able to impress him. So it's like he doesn't know that Belby doesn't have talent, even though so he's, again, he's a contradiction that clearly he's open to us, you know,
right,
to not, you know, those who just have talent and merit and not just the connections. But again, immediately dismissing Belby in that way shows that it's very, very classist.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I guess, you know, and I'm not in a academic world in my day-to-day life, but maybe that's, you know, common to befriend students that might help have family that can get you ahead. I'm sure it is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So anyway, and then we get to so Cormac's there because his uncle, what does he do? I don't know. He doesn't know. His uncle's a bigwig, and he also knows the minister, Rufus Scrimgeour, and, you know, Neville. Again, Neville is the son of very prominent, famous Auror parents, but, you know, no, but now Slughorn doesn't know what to make of Neville. And then there's a Slytherin boy there, Zabini, who apparently his mother is a black widow who, like, keeps her husbands keep dying and leaving her tons of gold.
Not sure what to say about that tonight, but yeah, she's, I don't know.
Yep. And then we finally go, Slughorn turns to Harry and is like, the chosen one, they're calling you now.
Yeah. Also gross, they're eating pheasant. Anyway, I was just like, ugh.
In childhood, there was a pheasant that just came and flew and just smashed itself into the side of the house, and it was the one wall of the house that didn't have any windows.
Oh no.
I didn't understand. Ultimately, we ended up stuffing him, like taking him to a taxidermist, and we gave him, and we gave him as, because he obviously had already died, and then we gave him as a gift to my aunt who loves like bird watching.
Oh, that's funny. Well, you know, that's okay. And pheasants, I guess people do hunt pheasants. I just forget about that. So, but it's just weird. So he's like, you know, housing this pheasant dinner or whatever, and just making conversation with these kids to basically
schmoozing. You
know, yeah. Yeah. I mean, some people might think, oh, they're taking, he's taking an interest in me and my life, but it's kind of like, you know, we know what his end game is here.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's, again, but unfortunately, this is how the world really works, and it's even worse, you know, in the Middle East, because this is a partial stereotype, but people, you know, one person said, like, why aren't these countries, like, as developed, or as not as progressive, or whatever, and then one, like, one Arab commentator was basically saying, we're not as good as we could be, because we don't give the most qualified candidate the job, we give it to our cousin. So just the whole, you know, in those sort of societies, you know, it's even worse where it's all like tribal nepotism.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a thing that still happens for sure.
Yeah. And I used to think that, okay, yes, there is nepotism, but I thought, you know, nepotism may help you get in the door, but it doesn't mean you'll be able to keep the job, because you still have to do the job, at least in the Western context. But I've learned in my current and other jobs that that's not true.
Yeah, I think that's an unfortunate thing that we learn. We're kind of told and think that their things are better, but it's not. So
Nope. And so yeah, the little lunch, bougie lunch concludes, and Harry, instead of going back to the compartment, decides he's gonna follow Zabini to figure out to snoop on the Slytherins.
He is obsessed with this idea. I mean, and I guess I can't blame him, because especially I probably spurned on even more that people are just dismissive of him. He wants to find hard evidence. But
yeah, that's the sad thing. It's like, you know, I feel like if, you know, Ron and Hermione would humor him more, like in a more, and again, in a genuine way, that he wouldn't be so like impulsive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, so he's eavesdropping on the Slytherins under his invisibility cloak, and you know, Zabini's just giving them, spilling the tea on Slughorn, and Draco's just like, oh, like, you know, maybe he doesn't know I'm on the train. McLagan from Gryffindor said Zabini, oh yeah, his uncle's big in the ministry. Someone else, Belby from Ravenclaw, and Longbottom Potter and that Weasley girl. He invited Longbottom. Well, I assume so, as Longbottom was there. What's Longbottom got to interest Slughorn? Potter, precious Potter. Obviously, he wanted to look at the chosen one. But that Weasley girl, what's so special about her? A lot of boys like her, said Pansy. Even you think she's good looking, don't you, Blaze? And we all know how hard you are to please.
Oh my god. Let's just calm down here, everybody. But, yeah, I feel there's a bit of a, like, a bit of slut shaminess to Jenny, and I don't really, really appreciate that, but
So unfortunately, well, again, that's what happens, you know, when all the boys like you.
And
then women are not the best towards you, your own freaking brothers aren't the nicest towards you, and it's sad.
Justice for Jenny.
Hashtag justice for Jenny. So, you know, Draco's a little butthurt that he didn't get an invitation, and Zabini's just like, I wouldn't bank on an invitation. He asked me about Knott's father when I first arrived. They used to be old friends, apparently, but when he heard he'd been caught in the ministry, he didn't look happy, and Knott didn't get an invitation, did he? I think Slughorn's not interested in Death Eaters.
I'm glad that, you know, the kid, like, basically was like, look, man, your dad's a Death Eater. You gotta come to the reality of that sometimes. Your name is a little sullied right now.
Mm-hmm. So, and then we get into, you know, what do you mean you might not be at Hogwarts? Well, you never know. I might have moved on to bigger and better things. And so Harry interprets this as, you know, oh, like, you know, what could be possibly bigger that you're not even worried about, like, school anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And then it's like, do you mean him? Like, capitalized. Malfoy shrug. Mother wants me to complete my education, but personally, I don't see it's all that important these days. I mean, think about it. When the Dark Lord takes over, is he going to care about how many OWLs and NWTs anyone's got? Of course he isn't. It'll all be about the kind of service he received, the level of devotion he was shown. And you think you'll be able to do something for him? Asked Sabini scathingly, 16-year-old and not even fully qualified yet.
Not if your mother doesn't, if your mother sacrifices you to the Dark Lord, you might be able to.
But. I just said, haven't I? Maybe he doesn't care if I'm qualified. Maybe the job he wants me to do isn't something that you need to be qualified for. So, you know, Harry more or less kind of sees this as a confession or a confirmation. And, you know, the train, and then they finally, you know, it leaves. They're about to, you know, they're all leaving. And Malfoy's like, you go on. And then he catches Harry.
Yeah.
What do you think about this? Were you surprised?
I mean, I wasn't super surprised that he caught him. Honestly, maybe a little. I was like, it could go either way. Because sometimes Harry gets away with stuff that, like, it's like a miracle. But I was a little surprised at Draco's reaction where he breaks his nose. Like, geez. It's like he stomped on his face. And I was like, oh my gosh. This is, we're leveling up with the, like... And we also have to remember, I think most times with Malfoy, people are around. Like, there are witnesses. This is one of the few times, if I remember correctly, that we don't have an audience to, you know, reprimand him. So he's probably taken out years of anger on Harry.
And he was kind of like not even wanting necessarily the audience of like his cronies either.
Right. Because they left. He knew he was there, but they left. And then he's like, I'm going to stay back and, you know, and then this happens.
Yep. See you around, Potter, or not. And taking care to tread on Harry's fingers, Malfoy left the compartment.
Yikes.
Yep. And then we move on to chapter 8, Snape Victorious. And Harry's just like, fuck.
Right.
I do to myself.
Oh my God. He's got a bloody nose. He's, and, you know, everybody's
disembarking.
Yeah, they're disembarking the Hogwarts train. So he's going, oh shit, maybe I'm going to be stuck on here and make it all the way back to, you know.
To London. Yeah. And, but he is luckily saved from his little mishap by none other than Nymphadora Tonks. Were you surprised by this?
Yeah, I was. Like, I was like, where have you been hiding out, honey? So she helps him out and fixes his nose, mm-hmm. which he's a little hesitant to have her do, but she does fine.
Yeah. I blame Gilderoy Lockhart for that.
Yeah. But he does describe her. He doesn't obviously say it like Fleur was talking about how she has let herself go or whatever. He's kind of like, her demeanor is much more
serious and somber.
Yeah, than it was.
Yeah, and she's like, who did it? Draco Malfoy, said Harry Biddlery. Thanks for... It's just... No problem, said Tonks without smiling. And it's just interesting because, you know, she has no reaction. Like, Draco is her first cousin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because her mother is Andromeda Tonks, yes. May Black, and that her Andromeda's sister is Narcissa.
Yeah, okay. Oh, man.
So, yeah, they're first cousins, and that, yeah, she, no reaction. And so, yeah, Tonks fixes Harry's nose. And, you know, we see she waves her wand, an immense silvery four-legged creature erupted from it and streaked off into the darkness. And it's like, was that a Patronus? Asked Harry, who had seen Dumbledore send messages like this. Yes, I'm sending word to the castle that I've got you or they'll worry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, Harry's like, what are you doing here anyway? And she's like, I'm stationed in Hogsmeade now as extra security.
Well, that's good. And, I thought it was interesting in this part how they talk about like how far it is to get to from Hogsmeade station to Hogwarts. Cause it seems like, you know, it happened so quickly, but Harry, what does he say? Having always traveled there by carriage, Harry had never before appreciated how far Hogwarts was from Hogsmeade station.
Yeah. He's never like, they've never had to walk it before.
No, they're spooky horses, flying cars. We've got all kinds of ways to get there. But.
Yep. Yeah, and Harry is, again, appraising Tonks, and he's like, now she seemed older and much more serious and purposeful. Was this all effect of what happened at the ministry? He reflected uncomfortably that Hermione would have suggested he say something consoling about Sirius to her, that it hadn't been her fault at all, but he couldn't bring himself to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the only thing that's bothering Tonks, but... Mm.
Any theories?
No. Not yet. I can't... They're
no longer going with the Sirius... Tonks ship.
You know, after that whole cousin, I'm not gonna, maybe I should stop pairing people because ultimately they're usually cousins. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's that's the thing with like this pure blood craziness is that if you're a pure blood fanatic, then basically you're going to be like the Targaryens because there aren't any, they're all interrelated in some capacity. Yeah,
that's very interesting. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And then they get to the gates. And Harry's trying to, like, he's using Alohomora. He's like, oh, do we have to jump the gate? And he's like, and Tonks just seems to be being very unhelpful and just like, no, you can't do it this way. You can't do it that way.
She's not like, this is how we do it. It's just like, somebody's coming for you, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and Harry thinks, oh, like, at the worst, it'll be Filch, you know, or something. Right. But who is it?
Stupid Snape
of all people.
I don't get this guy. Like, so the handoff is pretty much like, it's not very like gracious. It's just like, here you go, Harry Potter. All right, bye. You know, I don't even think they say bye.
Yeah, Snape says something to Tonks. Like, I was interested to see your new Patronus. He shut the gates in her face with a loud clang and tapped the chains with his wand again so that they slithered clinking back into place. I think you were better off with the old one, said Snape, with malice in his voice unmistakable. The new one looks weak. As Snape swung the lantern about, Harry saw fleetingly a look of shock and anger on Tonks's face. Then she was covered in darkness once more.
So that makes me think it was probably like in the shape of a black dog or something reminiscent of Sirius. But
because he said it is a four-legged creature, her Patronus now.
And then since Snape reacted so bitterly, that's what I thought. Maybe that's
put a pin in that. We will get back to it. You know, Snape did not speak for a minute or so. Harry felt as though his body was generating waves of hatred. And so Harry, which I don't think he's wrong, like, Snape did not help the situation with Sirius being stuck in Grimmauld Place by goading him, saying, oh, like, you're not doing anything for the order and I'm like out there risking my neck and, you know, all, you know, demeaning Sirius. And Harry partially blames Snape for like fostering that sort of animosity, which partially caused in his mind for Sirius to be so reckless, you know, and go to the ministry.
Right. Yeah.
Do you think that's an accurate observation, or is Harry just trying to assuage his own sort of guilt in regards to Sirius? What do you think?
I think he's genuinely pissed at Sirius. I don't think Harry does a really great job. I mean, I was going to say, I don't think he does a great job of taking ownership, but that's not true. I do think it's just like one more thing to like, it's just solidified this hate towards Snape. And what does he even say? Harry clung to this notion because it enabled him to blame Snape, which felt satisfying. And also because he knew that if anyone was not sorry that Snape was dead, it was the man now striding next to him.
Or Sirius was dead.
Yeah, sorry. So, I mean, I think that's a true statement. And I think that, you know, I think it's just when somebody you don't like does something that you don't, that like proves themselves to be worse, you know, there's that phrase, the bitch can't even eat crackers, right? You know, or whatever, like if you don't like somebody. I don't think it's this, but I also don't think like, Snape has never done anything to really help alleviate, you know,
anything to anyone.
Yeah, right. So yeah, I mean, I don't think it's wrong.
Yeah. Alrighty then. And Snape's like, 50 points from Gryffindor for lateness, I think. And let me see, another 20 for your muggle attire. You know, I don't believe any house has ever been in negative figures this early in the term. We haven't even started pudding. You might have said a record, Potter.
What an idiot.
The fury and hatred bubbling inside Harry seems to blaze white hot, but he would... I suppose you wanted to make an entrance, did you? Snape continued, and with no flying car available, you decided that bursting into the Great Hall halfway through the feast ought to create a dramatic effect. You know, he knew that Snape had come to fetch him for this, for the few minutes when he could needle and torment Harry without anyone else listening. And again, what? You know, again, you were just talking about Slughorn. Again, what does it say about you if you're like going to like teenagers for affirmation? But at we were already talking about that that elitism is a very in more malevolent form, but you know, Snape isn't even trying to be bougie. He just does it to be a sadist.
Yeah, he's just being an asshole. Like, this is not, it's, what a boring life, I think,
have. What a super boring life that's, like, that you don't think that, I hate this kid. I don't want to deal with him. Get someone else to go.
Right.
Well, it's like Uncle Vernon, who, right. It's, you know, it's, yes, please go, get out of my hair. It's like, you know, it's not even just get out of my hair so I don't have to deal with you. I don't like you, but I want you in my presence so I make you miserable.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, I don't know. That's not the type of person I am. So I think that just sounds like there's a better way to spend your time than doing this.
Gotcha.
And Snape could have enjoyed some lovely dinner, but instead he's being an asshole.
Yep. And they finally make it up to the Great Hall. And Snape's just like, no cloak. You can walk in so that everyone sees you, which is what you wanted, I'm sure.
Has done this a long time ago, but he decided who he thinks Harry is. And Harry's never been, like, showy.
No, he never has. Yeah.
Outside of Quidditch, I guess.
Yeah, but, yeah. So, I guess it's, yeah, like, Harry may look, I guess it's just a testament to just how, clouded Snape's judgment is that, you know, again, be interacting with this kid for like 6 years now.
Yeah.
6 years and still hasn't picked up that doesn't have the same vibe as his dad.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, he's just, I don't know. I think Snape just will never get over that fact and he doesn't want to. He is holding on to his anger like Harry is, you know, having decided Snape has killed Sirius.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Snape, again, totally is like Harry. Obviously, there's a power dynamic where Harry doesn't want to get in more trouble. But again, all the things, you know, petty and stubborn that all the things that Snape is being and what Draco are towards Harry, Harry doesn't do that back to them. So why is everyone treating him like he does?
I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, so he finally gets the Gryffindor table and they're like, what the hell happened? Why are you bleeding? And it's like, I'll tell you later.
Right. Yeah. She's like, shut the hell up. Let's not talk about it right now. Yep. We learn later or in a little bit that Draco's done some great reenactments that they can kind of see him like doing that.
Yeah. And he reached across Ron for a couple of chicken legs and a handful of chips, but before he could take them, they vanished to be replaced with puddings, which apparently, I didn't fully understand this, but pudding is a very general term in British English for, like, dessert. It's not like they're all, like, chocolate pudding, tapioca pudding, like, you know, like, pudding just means, like, oh, it's dessert time.
Dessert time. Okay. That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, because they're not going crazy with all the pudding. The actual pudding.
Okay.
It's been a long time since I had pudding now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, I want some chocolate pudding.
Yeah, me too. Now I'm hungry.
Yep. And so it's like he missed the sorting. Dumbledore hasn't said anything about Voldemort yet. And so what do we got? Oh, he finally fills them in on, you know, what did Professor Slughorn want to know what really happened at the ministry? Him and everyone else, sniffed Hermione. People were interrogating us about it on the train, weren't they, Ron?
Right. Hermione's getting a little salty there.
Yeah. Which I'm sure Ron actually probably enjoyed the intention.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Yep. And then nearly headless Nick comes in and is like, there has been much talk of that very subject, even among the ghost. And I am considered something of a Potter authority. It is widely known that we are friendly. I have assured the spirit community that I will not pester you for information. However, Harry Potter knows that he can confide in me with complete confidence. I told him I would rather die than betray his trust. That's not saying much, seeing as you're already dead, Ron observed. Once again, you show all the sensitivity of a blunt axe.
Yeah, that's a pretty good... I liked that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, well, nearly headless, like, what was it, I forget which book, but Hermione just says, just because you have the emotional range of a teaspoon doesn't mean we all have.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yep. And then finally, Dumbledore stands up and the student body sees his hand.
Yeah, this like weird dead hand. And they're kind of like speculating about it, which we have seen it. But it's not new to us as readers. It's new to the Harry.
Yeah.
It's new to everybody else.
Yeah, and Harry says his hand was like that when I was over the summer, and Hermione's just like, it looks as if it's died, said Hermione, but there are some injuries you can't cure, old curses, and there are poisons without antidotes.
So I know Dumbledore, I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this, you know this, but I know Dumbledore pieces out here. I don't know the kind of circumstances around that. So like my thought is like, maybe he's just slowly dying, like falling apart. I don't know. So that's my best guess one today. Yeah,
so, and Dumbledore goes on with, you know, all the school rules. And then finally he's like, oh, and Professor Slughorn is a former colleague of mine who has agreed to resume his old position of potions master. And everyone's like, potions?
Yeah, potions? Snape's still up there chilling.
Potions. Professor Snape, meanwhile, will be taking over the position of defense against the dark arts teacher.
Whoops. And then Harry's like, no. Everybody hears him.
Yeah. But Harry, you said that Slughorn was going to be teaching defense against the dark arts, said Hermione. I thought he was. Harry, racking his brain to remember when Dumbledore had told him this, but now that he came to think of it, he was unable to recall Dumbledore ever telling him what Slughorn would be teaching. And that was probably deliberate on Dumbledore's part.
Oh, yeah. Dumbledore is always two steps ahead, so...
Mm-hmm. Snape, who was sitting on Dumbledore's right, did not stand up at the mention of his name, but merely raised a hand in lazy acknowledgement of the applause from the Slytherin table.
Of course, they're psyched.
Yeah, so now you understand. What were you thinking when you heard the chapter title, Snape Victorious?
I honestly thought it was going to be another, like, background thing, which I know he's kind of had his ass kicked, like, when he was a kid, but I thought, is this going to be another flashback thing that something didn't happen? I did not see this.
I would love to see more flashbacks.
yeah but I didn't think he was going to be the defense against the dark arts teacher, but yeah. Here we are.
Well, that's one good thing, he said savagely. Snape will be gone by the end of the year. That job's jinxed. No one's lasted more than a year. Quirrell actually died doing it. Personally, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for another death.
Yikes, Harry. Like, that's what I thought when I read that. I was like, dude, like, rein it in. And Hermione said the same thing. Like, Harry, come on. It's a little much.
Yep. And so Dumbledore cleared his throat. Harry, Ron, Hermione were not the only ones who had been talking. The whole hall erupted in a buzz of conversation at the news that Snape had finally achieved his heart's desire. Seemingly oblivious to the sensational nature of the news he had just imparted, Dumbledore... Yeah, it goes on. Yep, Voldemort's back. Be safe. Don't do stupid shit. Although you probably will. You know, tell an adult. All those good things.
Yeah, we have extra protection because we know y'all will be crazy. But go to bed. Bye.
Yeah. And so then it goes on to say, what really happened to your nose? And Harry tells them it was a mark of their friendship that Ron did not laugh.
I don't know.
Yeah. I saw Malfoy miming something to do with the nose, he said darkly. Yeah, well, never mind that. Listen to what he was saying before he found out I was there. And Ron is still skeptical. He's like, come on, Harry. He was just showing off for Parkinson. What kind of mission would you know who have given him? How do you know Voldemort doesn't need someone at Hogwarts? It wouldn't be the first. Yep. And then Hagrid shows up. He's like, I wish you stopped saying the name.
Yeah.
Dumbledore uses the name, said Harry stubbornly. Yeah, well, that's Dumbledore, isn't it? Hagrid mysteriously. Yeah. So, you know. And then he's like, oh, yeah, come by early for Care of Magical Creatures. And you can say, hello to Buckbeak. I mean, Witherwings. And they all look at each other and it's like, you're not taking care of magical creatures, are you? Ron shook his head. No, and you're not either, are you? And Hermione, she's not, is she? Harry shook his head again. Exactly what Hagrid would say when he realized that his three favorite students had given up his subject. He did not like to think.
Ugh, I know. That was painful to read because... Poor Hagrid. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't... I know. Maybe not Ron or not Hermione. I would think I was under the impression that Hagrid had sort of mellowed out a little bit, that he still, you know, had stuff, but like thestrals and stuff. But I thought he had kind of like, if it was challenging, it wasn't like super, super crazy, just if yeah. not by pure desire, but just that, you know, Umbridge was under his, you know, watching him like a hawk. So, you know, I guess I'm just surprised that they have such a negative, you know, experience right. and that they're not willing to indulge Hagrid in this way anymore.
Yeah, we don't really know what like their class schedule is and why they didn't take it in favor of what. So
yeah, well, all we know with Harry is that it's not technically required for you know, to be an Auror.
Yeah
which yeah. And Hermione, again, despite her love of Crookshank, she's never come off as being like a super duper animal lover. Like, she wasn't comfortable with the thestrals and like all other things, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't show like an affinity for it. Like, Neville is probably still taking magic creatures. I think he's kind of.
Or at least herbology.
Yeah. For plants. And then I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, yep. That'll be fun when that news hits Hagrid.
Yeah, maybe they should just told him right then and there, like, no, you won't. Just get it, rip the Band-Aid off, kids.
Yeah, what is that? It's like when, like, with among writer friends, like, oh, what did you think of my book or what did you think of my poem? And you're just like,
Yeah, you don't know. Oh, man. Oh.
Yep. But anyway, and thus concludes chapter 8.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yep. Alrighty then. Those are our two chapters, and now we move on to Gothic Geek Out.
I really kind of had a hard time with this, but the thing that I thought I could make a connection to, especially to Gothic romance, was the like Slughorn's fancy little connected lunch. I feel like there are elements of the, you know, who you know and the well, you know, regarded family, especially in the older Gothic books, mm-hmm. like Northanger Abbey is the one I'm thinking of. And Jane Eyre, and just probably because I'm thinking about Jane Austen when I think about Northanger
yeah,
Abbey.
No, I chose the same thing.
You did? Oh, cool. Yes, okay, good. What were your reasons? Please tell.
My reasons were, again, in the same vein, like specifically that elitism and classism are huge things. That is still in modern Gothic literature, you know, which is just by the nature. And because so much of Gothic literature, like the old dilapidated manor, is the allegory for like the fallen aristocracy and the whole like system being critiqued through the descent of a one specific family and their specific estate.
Right. Yeah.
You know, again, that's a huge, huge theme, you know, transcends so many Gothic novels. The one I'm personally thinking about is The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters.
Have not read that yet.
Yeah, that one is really, really good in terms of, because it definitely shows a family like right after World War II. And just again, like in like so many other great disruptions of society, whether it's illness or war, that so often shakes up the hierarchy. And again, when your people are dying, it gets to a point that we don't care about hierarchies anymore, and we're all you know, it, you know, with those sort of tragic situations where there's lots of death, it lends to the sensibilities of like, at the end of the day, we're all like equal and we're all gonna die.
Yeah it is true. Yeah.
So that's what I was thinking of. And so, yeah, specifically with Slughorn and his bouginess and the elitism, especially in the sense of, you know, again, you can go back and forth trying to defend Slughorn's, like, you know, approach. But definitely that lunch really does not make his sort of favoritism or his little slug club look good, because he is giving opportunities to some people like Jenny. But the minute he knows someone's not connected, he's like, you know, dismisses Velvy. And so that's, you know, and that's how a lot of old families, you know, still, you know, are.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true.
And, you know, even if it's merit-based, but just the fact that why should one student be denied Slughorn's connections and not another student's? And so it just, you know, even in the most benevolent form, it still is creating a lot of elitism and, you know, classism. And again, especially, you know, in the American context, obviously we have quote unquote royal families like the Kennedys and things like that, but we don't have the concrete peerage system, but a big way in which the haves have, you know, consolidate their power is through the elitism of Ivy League schools.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So anyway, so yeah, because and even like the super old, like, you know, Anne Radcliffe's novels, so much of that is, you know, portraying feudal societies of France and Italy and how corrupt the aristocracy is and how corrupt the church, you know, the church is. And so, her, you know, she was, you know, she wrote a good portion of her novels in the 1790s. So just when the French Revolution happened. So Eat the Rich, like, she was heavily influenced by the French Revolution, which was like the modern birth of all of those sort of sensibilities against elitism and that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So glad to know we went to the same thing.
Yeah. That was, you know, interesting.
Mm-hmm. All righty then. And then I picked now we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And the card that I picked at random was card number 9 in the Major Arcana, which is the Hermit.
It's a picture of me on there.
picture of my husband. Never wants to socialize, which at least with, like, I like to go out and socialize, but then I want to come back to be a secluded Disney princess with my little woodland creatures friends.
Yeah.
So I'm a selective hermit.
That's.
And I need my abode to be that of a hermit, far in the woods and no one bothering me.
I understand that.
So the Hermit. The Hermit shows that you are taking a break from everyday life to draw your energy and attention inward and find the answers you seek deep within your soul. You realize that your most profound sense of truth and knowledge is within yourself and not in the distractions of the outside world. You leave behind the mundane to set off a journey of self-discovery, led only by your inner wisdom and guiding light. Now is the perfect time to go on a weekend retreat or a sacred pilgrimage, anything in which you can contemplate your motivations, personal values, and principles, and get closer to your authentic self. Because, you know, more often than not, and I think we might have had this card pull up in the past, I'm just not remembering, but typically hermit means solitude, but not necessarily in like an isolationist bad way. Like, usually it's, again, like sacred contemplation. And the first thing that comes to mind is the anti-example, I'm going to take a leaf out of your book, is Slughorn.
Oh, okay.
Slughorn, despite his age, you know, there is that sort of, you know, stereotype that when a person gets older, they start to be less concerned with the material and have attained some sort of like wisdom and realizing that, again, none of this stuff is going to matter when I die and I'm getting older. And so death is coming pretty soon, which is why we have the archetypes of, you know, the wise old man like Dumbledore, Gandalf, Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, right. The I was trying to think of an example of that. I don't know. I can't think of one. I'm fading fast tonight. I was thinking of the old crone, but that's a hermit. That would be a hermit, like somebody living in the forest. I too thought of it and as reading it as the anti, because I can't think of a good example of it reading, you know, as you read it. But I thought about Harry because he was very openly sharing like things that he would have kept to himself, you know, and it's too bad because when he shared that information with Mr. Weasley, and Hermione and Ron, the reception wasn't like
overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah. It was mainly
affirming.
Like, yeah, it was like, okay, yeah, whatever. So he kind of didn't do the typical hermit thing of keeping his, you know, emotions inside, and didn't work out well for him.
Yeah. So the only person who I think kind of is the actual hermit is Tonks right now.
Oh yeah. She does embody that.
I guess it's a question of how, you know, in terms of Harry's perspective of her, like being a little more serious and somber, you know, it's Harry's interpretation that this is stemming from maybe some form of depression or sadness because he's seen the contrast of what she used to be like. But maybe if he maybe didn't necessarily know what she used to be like, would she would, you know, in terms of her just being very, very somber and serious, would that be considered like, would that be considered maybe neutral?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know. We only know her as kind of that vibrant bubblegum pink haired lady to how she is now, which is very kind of down.
Down in the dumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm just trying to think. Any other hermits? Well, again, I think of Draco just in the sense of like he's shooting his mouth off and bragging and all this stuff because I think he is probably coming from a place of like loneliness because, you know, his he's so used to having his father like be, you know, such a, you know, huge presence, probably both in just general his personal life, but a huge presence like politically. It's like, you know, the standing joke is my father will hear about this.
Right, right. Yeah. And be like, good luck with that, Draco. He's in freaking Azkaban. So
yeah, so probably feeling a sense of loneliness that he hasn't felt before and is certainly from what we see is not being very, you know, isn't really drawing upon his mother for comfort in this time either.
That's true. That's true. That's a hermit. He's given some hermit vibes. That's what the vibes.
Yeah, but ultimately I think the best or the most hermit-like in this chapter is being Tonks. And Snape, of course, is just always a hermit on general principle, but never in a positive. I wish he would go be a hermit and have like a spiritual epiphany to realize that I'm a 36-year-old man and I'm still dealing with teenage schoolyard grudges.
Right. Like, move on, man. Like,
let's, go get let's laid. Move on.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that sentiment always.
Alrighty then. And the next card, the Oracle card, Black Moon Astrology card I picked was card number 50, which is called Saturn Return.
Okay.
Which I think it's not just like, it's not specifically the planet Saturn. It's more like a like astronomical phenomenon, I think, kind of like Mercury retrograde.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little more, it's more than just the planets. So here, what does it say? Saturn, as the Lord of Karma, shatters all illusions. It takes approximately 29 years for Saturn to orbit the sun. So the first Saturn return happens at around the age of 29. It marks a period where childish things must be put away. There is no more getting ready to live your life. It is a time to live it and be responsible for your own dreams, goals, and affairs. If you hold on to things with no basis in reality, your suffering will grow and depression may follow. You cannot escape this truth-seeking energy. You must face it. The second Saturn returns occurs around age 60, when you become aware of your own mortality. You may become keenly aware that you may not have enough time left to achieve your goals. Often there's a paring away of what is not essential, but for those who have not acted wisely, this will be a difficult transition. Mm. When this card is drawn, it will feel as if nothing goes right for you, and you may feel very discouraged. Just as it seems things are progressing, there are obstacles. What this truly is Saturn showing you a part of your life that may not have been based upon anything real. It may have outlived its purpose, or perhaps you've misjudged a situation thinking it better than it was. Interesting, complex. You know, I have to ponder this one for a moment. Honestly, it just makes me think of, you know, Snape, even if he lived to be 200 years, no matter how many Saturn orbits went by, he is never gonna, you know, let go of the stuff from his childhood and fucking grow up.
No, he's not. He's going to embrace that. This is my example I used earlier, but I'm going to use Harry's like owning up to talking to Mr. Weasley. I feel like that was a very mature, you know, letting childish things go type of behavior, where in the past it would be like, you know, he's kind of not telling anybody helpful things. He handled things pretty well and not we haven't had caps lock Harry yet. So that was pretty early on in the last book. So he wasn't hollering about everything.
Yeah. And another thing in terms of just, you know, the theme of age and getting older and more mature, like certainly Tonks, you know, she may be overdoing it a little bit to the point of, you know, to the point of, you know, getting into the like depression territory, but definitely she is sort of, you know, growing up, and certainly the, you know, as I said, the Saturn shatters all illusions. So probably she's not the same person as she was before the battle of the, at the Department of Mysteries.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Then what do we got? If this card is drawn, you will not be given a pass, and the matter in question will not progress as easily as you might want it to. But more positively, this marks a time where, when things are solidified, whatever you accomplish currently will have permanence to it. You will have worked hard, and your hard work will pay off, gradually growing more successful over time. Well, going back to what it says about, like, the second Saturn returns is about age 60, where you become aware of your own mortality. Again, Slughorn, you know, is still attaching a lot of importance to, like, material things and socio-political connections, and not thinking about, I'm gonna die soon and none of this is gonna matter.
Right. Or maybe that helped him, like, with his realization of, maybe I should not hide, I should go, and I'm gonna die soon, maybe I should go have another go at life before I kick it. I don't know.
Yeah. The only thing, the only way this sort of, again, he's portrayed as very materialistic. The only way that this sort of fits into, like, again, thinking about your own mortality is Slughorn thinking to himself, what is my legacy going to be when I die?
Yeah.
And, you know, at least people are going to say, oh, like, he was such a great teacher, he helped me out, like, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right. And then he's going to have that in his, like, mind, have that on the right lips, and that, that's his legacy, that seems to be important to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the right people, not not just like, oh, whatever. He, and the right people have that information.
Mm-hmm. Then, oh, the last paragraph, it shows, you are now at a time where you understand things better than you did even a year ago. It is time to be brave and face the important, this important passage. There are no quick fixes with this card turns up. Know what you can and cannot do. Take life in a measured way, much like the planet of time already does. Let go of your illusions, for they do not serve you. You're down to brass tacks now. Time to see what you are made of. Definitely going back to Harry, you know, certainly handling things much better, especially for it only being like a few months since Sirius has died.
Yeah. For you, I mean, I forget how shortly ago, you know, that's not how you say that, but the time span in which that all happened is not, it's not like years ago. We're dealing with months. So
yeah, which I think, which again, from my own personal experience of with smear campaigns and why I connect and relate so much to the fifth book is, you know, just not having to deal with that smear campaign anymore can, you know, I think probably significantly helps his headspace to be able to deal with things, you know, more maturely and everything.
Agreed.
Alrighty then. And then we conclude with our final exercise, fan fiction time.
My thought this week was, what if Tonks did not show up? And Harry just kept on going on that train.
I guess the question is, this could get really dark of Harry, like, starving or, like, not getting water. Because I guess this is how, maybe not in the past, but maybe in the present, like, how secure, like, how much would, like, the cleaning people, or is it just done by magic? Like, I would like to think, this is my little fan fiction, that Harry goes all the way back to London, which is a pain in the butt. However, who should house elves come to clean everything up, and who should find him but Dobby?
Oh, there we go. That's a good way to button up that story. Yeah. Yeah, I kind of thought just it would just be an irritation, you know? Like, I think I was just like, he would be fine. Like
but, yeah, like the fact that, you know, people would, you know, in a day, people would figure out that he didn't get off the train. So go look at the train.
And somebody would say, oh, he has that invisibility. Like, they put it together. I just feel like if I was, let's just say, like, if Harry the writer wanted to embellish and not tell the truth, he could have been, like, bought some time and was like, man, I was on this train for an entire day. It was just very annoying, just to irritate the reader. But so I'm glad that that's not how it went. But I wasn't super concerned with his, like,
well-being.
Mortality. Yeah, I was like, he'll be fine.
Yeah, I started to go that route, but yeah, the fact is, he is Harry Potter, and, you know, His life is important and is being monitored heavily right now.
Yeah, well.
Not that, and I guess if someone else was in that position, that might be worse because no one would be looking for them, which again, Karl Marx was right that, you know, screw hierarchies of, you know, political power, of celebrity, we're all the same.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
If only if only we, they could have come up with a better way of implementing that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what was your fan fiction? That was the only one I could conjure up this week.
Honestly, apart from that one, I couldn't think of anything. I'm trying to think of something right now. Again, just what if Slughorn actually was the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher like everyone presumed? Yeah, and we don't, again, we'll see his teaching style soon. So I would prefer to save that one for, you know, a little later to see, you know, how he teaches potions. And then we can possibly make an assessment on how he would teach Defense Against the Dark Arts if he's capable of doing it.
I feel like we already know who would get the best grades would be the people that could be connect him the best. So,
Or what if Harry, Ron, and Hermione weren't jerks and continued care of magical creatures?
And then Hagrid would be thrilled.
Would be thrilled. There, and again, this would be care of magical creatures at the NEW, the highest level NEWT.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe they could do dragons or some cool things.
Man, that's a really annoying thing to think about. Like, they could see some cool stuff, but they're like, no thanks. Like, come on, guys. I wanted to read about more magical creatures.
Yep, and then I sometimes wonder, like I don't know if it's a what if. I can't even say what exactly. I just, you know, we don't get that much of an interaction. You know, we get a little something that clearly something's off with Snape and Tonks.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, sometimes I always, like, I would always wish that Tonks would, like, be more, like, you know, aggressive and be like, the fuck did you just say?
Yeah. Yeah. She's definitely not in that place. I feel like Tonks pre, you know, incident would be like that. But right now she's just like, I don't even care. Like, I got out of bed. That's a good enough celebration.
Yeah. You know, sometimes that's has to be enough for me on some days.
Me too. It's a fun journey, but it is what it is.
Yes, I got out of bed and went to work, and that is going to have to be enough, and the dishes in the sink be damned.
Agreed. I have had, that might be my night tonight, because I feel like I'm about to fall asleep, so not because of the subject, just because I'm sleepy.
Yeah, the only reason I'm not falling asleep is I had super caffeinated Persian tea at like 3 this afternoon.
At about 36, I pivoted into the territory where I cannot drink caffeine after 3. Otherwise, I will be up all night.
It won't be, it won't make me like all night. Like I can drink that caffeinated tea as, you know, as late as 8 p.m. and I'll still be fine. Like there have been points where I've drank it right before bed and I'm just like, go to sleep.
I miss those days because I used to be able to do that, but not anymore. So. Yeah,
the only way I have to be mindful, and I may have mentioned this on the show, which is if I drink the super caffeinated tea and it's hot outside and I have to go driving, like I will get nauseous. I will want to throw up. Like I just have to be very cognizant of drinking that tea if I'm going to be in a car and if it's super hot.
Mm, yeah.
Because or like hiking, I can't drink it before hiking. Otherwise, I'll want to throw up.
It might have happened to me this weekend. I wonder what, I mean, it did. But
anyway, there are a bunch of losers for not continuing with Care of Magical Creatures, and I wish they would have.
Yeah, I do too. I'd like to read about more magical creatures.
Yep. Alrighty then. And so tune in next time, everyone, and we will go over chapters 9 and 10, The Half-Blood Prince.
Whoa. Wow,
the titular chapter.
Yeah.
And chapter 10, The House of Gaunt.
Huh. Okay.
Yes. So, catch you guys later. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMayerStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mayer Studios podcast.